I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. With me today in the St. Charles Borromeo Patron of Seminary and Studio are my two stalwart co-hosts, Father Garrett Burns.
Stalwart. First time I've ever been called stalwart. Wow. I'll take it.
And Father Drew Hoffman.
I've been called stalwart. It was a little bit of an insult. It had to do with a little bit of a weight gain that I had, that had occurred. Did we change the podcast studio name? What is happening?
I don't understand what's happening with the podcast. I have no idea what you're talking about. This is always will be the St. Charles Borromeo Patron of Seminarians. Yeah. Father Garrett and I had a meeting about it.
The disrespect in this podcast studio.
So I had a moment yesterday. Very exciting for me. It's kind of one of the nerdy aspects of my life, but I get really excited when I finish a book. Not necessarily just because I finish the book, but because I get to pick the next book. And that's like, it's almost like going to the candy store for me. I've got a stack of books behind my chair and I go like, oh, what am I going to read next? It is a genuinely exciting thing for me. So I just finished Walker Percy's The Moviegoer. It was all right. It has a few brilliant moments in it, but generally all right. Don't know what I'm going to read next. I haven't gone to the candy store yet, but we're going to figure that out. But I do really get excited for starting a new one. I'm a big reader. I know not everyone is. Usually I have about three books going at once. I've got a fiction book, a spiritual book, and then kind of a learning sort of book somewhere on the side. And I read them at different times than that. I love to hear about what other people are reading. That's always interesting to me, just what's going on with what they are reading. So that is my question for you guys to start off today. What are you reading?
I'm pretty similar. Usually I have a couple different going. I think my imagination is not good enough to be really good at reading fiction. Like, I've been trying to read Dune, and I've heard the beginning is tough, and there's like a lot of names and all kinds of stuff, but sometimes I just putter out. But I also, I don't know what you guys are like on this. I hate not finishing a book.
Yeah, that's hard for me.
So sometimes it will just take me months and months, but I'm like, I'm not going to just stop after a couple chapters. Everybody's a little different on that. But so I'm trying Dune a little bit. Yeah, I have some spiritual reading doing. I always, around this time of year, Advent and Christmas, read the Infancy Narratives again.
That's what I'm reading. We didn't even talk about this
beforehand. High five. Virtual meme. Yeah. And what else am I reading? Giannis, I just finished a little bit ago. Biography on Giannis Antetokounmpo.
He's my favorite.
Chad, that's like a Paul Butterfield moment for him. He's the NBA MVP.
Yeah. Never heard of him.
We
watched the finals over here this summer, and we had to explain to Chad often what was happening.
Not a basketball watcher, player, interester.
The biography is awesome because he grew up poor, very poor in Greece, and there's all kinds of stuff about him being even found out, you know, and then he comes over as a young kid to play in the NBA and has kind of his haters or whatever, and then is built up into an MVP. And so really just cool to hear about his story and who he is, and helped me as a basketball coach, you know, for sixth grade girls. I incorporate a lot of the same things.
Do you make them take a chapter home and read about it?
Yeah.
And
tell me what you learned. And yeah. So yeah, that's the main stuff I'm reading right now.
I remember him now. He was the Greek guy.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I know Yanni. You know. I love Yanni. He is my favorite player.
Yanni guy. Everyone calls him Yanni. Yeah. So that shows that you're in on it. I'm reading Infancy Narratives too. It's around Christmas. I suggest that to anybody. I've read it probably every Advent for 7-8 years, and I can think of four things I preached on this Advent that I never preached on before.
That's
exclusively
cool.
Because I found it in the book. And I've read it 100 times and preached, even now in my 5th year of priesthood, I've read it while I'm preaching, but things stuck in a different way this time around. And next year, more things will stick around. So Infancy Narratives is a masterpiece. I'm reading a book called The Shoes of the Fisherman.
I've heard of that.
By Morris West. And it's taken me a little bit more time than I'd like, because I started reading some Louis de Wahl novels in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really good. It's about a new pope who was a prisoner under communist rule in Russia, and he becomes the pope after he's freed from Russian captivity, and his captor becomes the head of the Soviet Union. and this kind of weird relationship that they respect each other a lot, actually. And the captor is the one who let him sneak out. It's a cool like intrigue, and there's some other things going on in the Vatican. So I'm reading that. And then I love Louis de Wall novels. Yeah. I've just got into Louis de Wall, who's a Catholic writer who writes historical fiction based on saints.
Mm-hmm.
So has books on, I read Francis Xavier's, St. Thomas Aquinas, St. Longinus, and I'm reading Catherine of Siena's right now, Lay Siege to Heaven. So I'm almost done with Catherine. I love Catherine of Siena, is one of my three favorite saints of all time. And so reading her kind of, not biography, but a little bit about her life in a more historical fiction sort of way has really got me psyched.
Nice, nice. So I just finished Walker Percy's The Moviegoer, and I'm debating between the two. Either I'm going to do Surprised by Joy, C.S. Lewis's kind of autobiography, or All Quiet on the Western Front as a reread. I read it years ago and remember it being pretty influential. I'm like, I need to go back to that. It's a World War One novel.
Okay.
Then for spiritual reading, I'm reading St. Francis Xavier's Introduction to the Devout Life. I've read a lot of his things before. That's like his big work, and I've never touched it. So, you know, 11 years in the priesthood, it's time I introduce myself to the devout life, see what that looks like, see if I want to try it, see if he can convince me of it. And then kind of on the side, I'm doing a reread of Jacques Philippe's Interior Freedom, Jacques Philippe is great, everything he puts down.
Yeah.
That's my favorite. A lot of people like Searching for Maintaining Peace.
That's probably
Interior Freedom's my favorite. He's just so brilliant in it.
Yeah, that's the first Jacques Philippe I read, and so I hand out Searching for Maintaining Peace more.
I hand out Interior Freedom.
Okay,
so we're good partnership.
We should be getting this is right. Sponsored by Jacques Philippe. Right.
If you're listening, Jacques,
send us some books.
Jackie, that's what I call him.
Everyone does.
Yeah, right.
So many nicknames.
I'm like George Bush. I just give everyone a nickname and run with it.
One of my employees put on my desk this morning, actually, Silent Night, which is the story of the truce during World War One on Christmas night, and how the Germans and the Allies set aside things and played soccer and sang just for that one night. She knows I like history and has some religion aspects to it and thought I'd like it. So that's kind of like the candy store. I'm excited to start that here in the next week or two.
I do have to shout out two of the best books I've read in the last year that just blew my mind good. Cry the Beloved Country by Alan Paton. I think a lot of people read that in high school.
We read it in high school.
Yeah. We did not.
It's about South Africa?
Yeah. Right. I think right before apartheid, just the lyrical quality of it. But the main character is just so good and honest. And even in his failings, you're like, I know what this guy is like. I love that character. Just, man, I was getting choked up in Chipotle reading it. So that doesn't just usually happen.
Yeah.
That's right. I inhaled a jalapeno.
How much reading are you doing in Chipotle? What?
That's my favorite place to read. You don't read in Chipotle? No,
I can't say I have.
It's wherever I end up for lunch on my day off. That's like my longest stint of fiction reading is lunchtime on day off. And I happen to be at Chipotle that day during a very emotional part of Cry the Beloved Country. Get off my back.
Catholic priest was bawling in the side of Chipotle. Windows, sun's shining in, and some kids making fun of you.
No one consoled me. Yeah, no one.
You're just trying to get free guac, and they knew it.
The other just fantastic book I read this last year was Teresa of Avila's Interior Castle, which I'd always been intimidated by, honestly. Yeah. I'm like, I'm not touching that one. I know I'm not ready for that.
She scares me, man.
Right. It was so accessible. Like, I read it and so easy to understand. So many things made sense. It scared me in that it kicked my butt in a lot of like, ooh, that's got to work on that one there. But it was, that's one of those books I keep a very small section on my bookshelf of favorite books that I plan to reread about every, 5 to 10 years. And that's right up there because it's a spiritual book I'm going to have to go back to a few times because it is just so amazingly good.
Cool.
She also sponsors the podcast, Teresa of Avila, her and Jacques Philippe.
Terry.
Good company.
Yeah, Terry. Terry A.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with, the other Teresa's out there. Terry Lasso, Terry of Calcutta,
Terry, I don't like that at all.
Yeah, I go back to a thought, just like you said, getting that small set of books that you'll go back to. It's something from Drew. I think you had a business professor.
Oh, you're 5 feet of books. Yeah,
you have
that's
5
right.
feet. And I don't know how long or when he says to decide on your 5 feet. Because I think I'm still working on mine, but I think that's a cool idea of trying to develop you're 5 feet on a bookshelf of those books at some point in your life, and then you'll basically just go back to those books, or at least you'll always go back to them.
And how you would almost like define yourself by these books. What have defined you, and what if somebody were to ask and walk into your study, what books have really formed you? Would you like to see form others? And I don't have a literal 5 feet of books, but I probably could name here the 15 books that would fit into that.
Right.
Which is good. That's I kind of had forgotten about that. Yeah.
I don't know if you guys saw like the news trend cycle during COVID and all the Zoom interviews that were going on, that people were really getting into reading the bookshelves behind the people that were giving the interview to figure out what they're reading. And then people started calculating for that and putting...
It's like a salesman thing that you're doing almost, so that they can think you're smart by what books you have there and what statement politically maybe that you want to make by what books you have.
I definitely keep my smart books in my office. Like all my fiction books are up in my sitting room, but all my smart books are in the office.
Yeah, in my house where nobody ever is. It's like the Mark Titus books I like and the dumb stuff that I've read over
the bathroom readers. The bathroom readers.
Jokes priests can tell, you know, those sorts of things. Well, I could talk about books all day, but that's not the purpose of our podcast. Today's topic, I am calling The Idol of Clarity. Some guys, I think, see discernment as almost like a race course where there's a finish line. And that finish line is, okay, I'll go into seminary when I cross that finish line. And that finish line is that I am 100% sure that I'm supposed to be in seminary. And I can't go into seminary until there are zero doubts left. When that happens, they have quite literally made an idol out of clarity. Like they are putting this before God. Yeah, God's pushing me, but I need to be certain about that. And I've got news for you that 100% certain, it doesn't exist. At least not for me in most aspects of my life. I don't know. Maybe you guys experienced 100% certainty somewhere along the way, but that's not been my experience. So I don't know if you guys have seen that with other guys looking for this unreachable certainty or how you overcame that in your own lives.
I certainly experienced it. We can talk a little bit about that on a college campus. That is a massive, massive, massive thing of paralysis that comes from lack of certainty. The lack of action is so crippling and so devastating that you see good people who can't make a decision because they desire that clarity. I think there's some other underlying things, lack of taking a risk.
Yep.
Lack of self-confidence. So there's some other underlying aspects of it, but it comes across in this idol of, I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure. And I think there's a lot of things we could talk about in that kind of realm.
And I think it's just good to recognize if that is what you're seeking, what does that say about God? If God was one to give 100% certainty, what kind of God would he be? And he would be, just the tyrant or the like, you have to do this thing now. I've made it 100% clear to you. Mm-hmm. But he's a personal God who invites out of love. And so he's not just going to, put the neon sign that says this box or that box or whatever. But it's an invitation. And you're honestly free to say yes or no. And that's a God you could give your life for.
Yeah.
When a God that requires, before you make a decision, 100% certainty, is not a God that you would want to give your life for.
I also think I've come to believe that's a kindness that the Lord doesn't step in and say, you do this. Because you'll hear people say all the time, well, if the Lord would just tell me what to do, I would do it. No, you wouldn't. I'm sorry, but we have the Ten Commandments and he has told us very specifically what to do here. And we have plenty of people that have heard that know that don't do that. And so this idea that if God just appeared in my life and told me what to do, I would do it, I think is a false narrative that people tell themselves. It's maybe a comforting narrative, but I don't think it's true. And if God came to us and said, you do this, and we didn't do that, well, we don't have any excuses at that point. So I think it's a grace sometimes that he doesn't tell us exactly what to do because we are willful and selfish at times in our own lives.
Pope Benedict talks about that with the wise men. Everyone sees the star. The star was actually fairly easily accessible to understand what was going on, but only the three wise men follow it. There has to be, even if clarity is given, that there is something in the heart that actually responds to that much more than this clear sign. One of the traditions, it's Jupiter and Saturn coming together, and Jupiter is the king and Saturn's the Jewish people. Okay, king of the Jews is coming. Let's go see it. Well, that's about as clear as it gets, but only these three wise men. So even when the Lord gives what seems like 100% certainty, Most people, myself included, ignore that. And so that is such a false thing. If the Lord only would tell me what to do, I'd do it. No, you wouldn't. No, I wouldn't. That happens all the time, that somebody from the outside can be like, well, you should, you can see all these points, right? That's obviously what you should do. No, I don't think so. But I think that's as common as a thing to desire a clear sign, but I'll reject it all. There's a great line in my favorite book, Canticle for Leibowitz. Pray for a sign and stone it when it comes is the fallen man's continued thing.
Pray for a sign and stone it when it comes. Oof.
Read Canticle for Leibowitz. That book rocks.
I've never read it. But that line is a gut punch. I think it is a grace then that the Lord does not step in and tell us what to do, because he's done that in the Gospels and still we ignore him. And the reality is we live in a world with doubts. So why would this one thing be contrary to everything else we experience in the world? We live in a world with doubts because we doubt ourselves because of original sin, because whatever the reason, why is discernment the only thing that I can only act when I have 100% certainty? Why? We don't do anything else that way. I don't buy lunch with 100% certainty. Yeah. How many times have I looked at the menu and I'm like, well, that sounds good. Or I'm going to ask the waitress because I'm just not sure what to get here. No other parts of my life live in that way. Why would discernment experience that? And I think the evil one then wants to take that. And like you said, paralysis, or just freeze us in that indecision. Another way sometimes I see that working out is with guys when they're discerning the possibility of seminary and they think they can only enter seminary when they're 100% sure they're going to be a priest, right? Like, well, I can't go into seminary until I know I'm going to be a priest. That's not what seminary's for. Seminary is to figure some of that out, is to work that out with the Lord to see, okay, where are you asking me to take a step of faith? Where are you asking me to trust? Where are you going to put someone in my life to help me to see that you are speaking to me along the way there?
If you're not sure if you should be a priest, seminary is just the place for you in many ways. It is. That's actually an answer for you. Now, you need to have some baseline things, of course, but it's a place for lack of clarity. That's how it's set up. And that's helpful for young men to hear, I hope.
And I think I've seen it. I saw it in myself of making an idol out of clarity. Was just something to hide behind I don't have to actually engage this much further. I'm not ready to go to seminary. I'm not really sure about it. Well, okay, that means continue to pray, continue to grow in knowledge of yourself. Talk to other people about it. I was very much just kind of doing it on my own. And yeah, it's super easy to say, well, I don't have 100% clarity when I haven't really talked to my friends. I haven't really talked to a vocation director, a priest about it. Then yeah, you're never going to have 100% clarity, but you're not going to even get close if you're just watching some vocation stuff on the internet and listening to a podcast. But I mean,
unless it's an amazing podcast. Yes,
incredible podcast. I think, as I mentioned, lack of self-confidence and inability to take risks undergird just what Gare is saying, that it actually ends up being just hiding the real fact that I'm nervous and I'm scared. And I don't know if the Lord will take care of me if I take this chance. And I don't know what kind of God, we've talked about this, I think, in the first episode, what kind of God do I believe in if I think he'd let me down if I took a risk for him?
Mm-hmm.
So my vision of God, I need to pray about if that's the case. And my vision of myself, what's my confidence level in myself and who I am and what my dignity is? Those are undergirding even more than maybe lack of clarity. That often can be an excuse to not act and to put the burden on the Lord.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of times those doubts that keep a person from having clarity are pretty similar. A lot of times among guys, which is really the reason we have this podcast, because we have a lot of these same questions that, oh, I'm not sure about this, or I'm not sure about this. And then this guy three doors down is having the same doubts, but they're not talking to one another, which is why another thing I encourage guys, if they're struggling with clarity or doubt, make sure you talk to someone who's been down that path. I can't tell you how many guys have walked to my office, well, Father, I'm worried about this, or I'm not certain about that. Neither was I when I was 17, 18. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that. You're not unusual. You're not doing something wrong because you have these doubts or you have this lack of clarity. And so if you're not doing something wrong, if you're waiting for it to be quote unquote fixed before you can move, well, you're never going to move.
Everyone talks about wanting to go on adventures and wanting their life to be adventurous and stuff like that. And I agree. Well, here's an example. Like, here's exhibit A of a way for your life to be adventurous. Do something that you don't have all of the answers to. usually when people are, I want my life to be adventurous. It's like, I want to go to Paris without an itinerary. That's what people mean by I want to be an adventurer.
With lots of money, though, so yeah, I can do whatever I need.
Plenty of money, no bad thing could actually happen to me. That's what people, or we're going to get crazy on this weekend night and see what happens. That's not an adventure. That's an entitled rich kid. That's fine. It's fun, I guess. But that's not adventure. A vocation where we have to take risks, that's an adventure.
Absolutely.
And that's what, again, a God that doesn't give 100% clarity invites you into, is a life full of adventure. And so you won't ever have certainty, similar to, I would guess, a married couple of, I remember hearing priests say that. I'm like, when did you know you were going to be a priest? And, you know, the classic answer of like, when my nose hit the marble, like ordination day was the day I knew I was going to be a priest, and not a minute before it.
Yeah, I always thought I was kind of late to come to that reality, because I struggled with doubts a lot through seminary and had to be boosted in my confidence, had to be talked with other priests to know that. You know, I think a lot of confidence came to me about a year before I was ordained a deacon, but even then there were still doubts that would linger around there. But it took me, you know, I was in seminary, 5 years before it really became like, no, I'm pretty sure, not 100%, pretty sure this is where I'm going to be. And the Lord was inviting me to trust in him, and he has taken care of it surprisingly and graciously. I don't know if you guys have run into this. Sometimes the people, at least, that project the most certainty are the ones I trust the least.
Oh, sure.
And so again, some people, if they've not worked with a lot of priests, they're like, well, man, I wish I could be as certain as that person over there. And I look at that person, I'm like, there's something underneath the rug on that one.
Even as a pastor, people are asking me, so I'm a first time pastor, and I have a different pastor role than most guys, but finances and HR and stuff like that. People ask me all the time as we've gotten to Christmas break, oh, how are things going? I tell them almost always, I don't know what I'm doing. And people act, oh, I'm sure you're great. I'm sure you know it. I'm like, I'm not asking for you to feel bad for me, and I'm not doing some false humility. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm fine with that. I wouldn't be telling you I don't know what I'm doing if I wasn't fine with that. I'm very proudful. I'm okay with not knowing what I'm doing. I'll learn. I'm sure of it. And you've got people who care about you, who are keeping an eye on you, all of those things. That's an adventure to not know what you're doing and believe that it's going to work out as long as you're working your butt off and praying to the Lord.
And you see that with, you know, young families. How many parents are you talking about? I have no idea what I'm doing with these kids.
Yeah. Good.
And that's okay. And that's how it should be. And it's a great life.
Welcome to being human. You know, it's the reality. It's going to surprise us. But again, like, as you were saying, as long as we're getting those base things in there, we're praying, we're talking with knowledgeable people, we're trying to live right and do right, we're not going to have 100% certainly, but the Lord can then work through those judgments that even if we make a mistake, he can work through that. He can help right the ship, and he can take care of us in that. So this idea that I've got to be 100% certain before I make a choice or move or step into seminary is just absurd.
I think it's really helpful to hear that there isn't one specific plan the Lord has for you that if you take a misstep from it, then you're done. You're done. There is big V vocation that you do have written on your heart. Absolutely. And we've talked about guys who have said no to that many times. But it isn't as if, hey, I go to seminary or I take this risk or something like that, and if I'm wrong, I'm in trouble. Like, again, what kind of Lord do I believe in? He lets me take some risks and mistakes and mess some things up maybe. And that will all, I'm trying to right my wrongs, but these wrongs help me write the song, a wise man once said. Mm. And that is a lot.
I don't know that song.
That's Kanye West. And
Connie, we call
him. Connie.
Full circle here.
That's right.
But that's a cool God to have. That's a cool God to have.
I don't know if you guys carry around or have seen, it seems like a lot of priests or a lot of seminarians, Thomas Merton's prayer on uncertainty. I don't even know what it's called, but there's like a line there. Lord, just because I think I'm doing your will doesn't mean that I am, but my desire to please you does in fact please you.
Unfortunately, I think I quote Father Gale in every one of these, but he would make us, before every staff meeting, read a prayer from his old spiritual director. I'll try my best and I'll probably mess up half of it. That was a prayer we always prayed before every staff meeting. But I love that Merton one. It's like, I might not be doing the right thing. Yeah, okay.
And you'll find that with a lot of the saints that have written prayer. You know, I can think of John Newman has a prayer of abandonment and in the midst of darkness. And he loves, it's got a great line like, if I am in perplexity, my perplexity may serve you. If I am in sorrow, my sorrow may serve you. If I am in success, my success may serve you. And so this, he's not certain. He's a saint. Blessed Charles de Foucauld has a beautiful prayer of abandonment. Thomas Merton, you read Mother Teresa, Terry of Calcutta, her work. And, you know, there's a lot of abandonment going on there. And so you see in the example of all of these saints, these people that were just crushing it also did not have 100% certainty in the moment of what they were doing. They knew that they loved the Lord. They knew as far as they could see, this was the best choice they could make, and they were going to live it to the hilt. That's what they did, and that's what made them saints, not certainty.
Anything worth doing is worth doing poorly. I tell my staff that all the time. If it's worth doing, it's worth messing up and maybe not quite knowing what we're doing when we start doing it. Mm-hmm. That's exactly the opposite of how I usually want to live. That's how, you know, I mentioned this when we were talking about this podcast, starting this podcast. You know, we don't really know what we're doing, but I'm going to give things a go. And if it blows up, like if it's not helpful at all, okay, that's fine. Who cares? We gave it a go. And that's a funner place to live.
It is, absolutely. I think that is a good spot to leave off on for today as well. So if you're waiting for certainty out there, stop. Our Lord is not the Lord of, I guess that's not a good way to put it, is it? Our Lord is not the Lord of certainty?
That probably isn't
that doesn't sound theologically good. I may or may not cut that out. I guess a better way to say it is keep praying and trust in the Lord in that. That's always a good answer. Keep praying, trust in the Lord. Thank you for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you would like us to address, please email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also go to our website, about4.org. That's the word about and the number 4.org. And we will see you next week.